It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
That sound you hear is the time for Dynasty Talk. Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, Ebro, and with me to talk about all of these NFL draft prospects is my co-host Adam Pfeiffer. We are breaking it down, bringing all the heat for NFL draft season. Adam, what's up, man?
I'm pumped. I've been waiting to talk about these prospects for a while now, and then we had to watch whatever the hell that Super Bowl was. And then it made me want to talk about prospects even more. So this is going to be fun. I mean, we had the Dynasty, you know, trades and trade fours last week, and then this week's all dedicated to, I mean, not even just this week, because there's so many prospects we're going to talk about. We're going to have a bunch of great guests on, and it's going to be awesome. This is a really fun draft class, and it's honestly, it's a little bit more difficult to break these players down because a lot of these players didn't play last year because they opted out. We're not going to have like a traditional combine in a sense, so it's going to be a lot different this year.
Yeah, man, I think it's going to be a really interesting year for prospects. Like, we saw some of the things that, you know, with teams and just the draft and things affected by COVID, we're looking at this year, and those things are compounded. You're talking about no combine. What are pro days going to look like? What's the laterality and how comparable are all these things? Like, are all these damn running backs we're going to see going to come in at like 205, 210, running 4.440s, baby? Like, it's going to be really interesting. I'm curious of how they're going to set some of these things up. The NFL is going to release some of those details, but you're talking about it. I love diving into these prospects. And Adam, like, we're going to be covering quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends, all of these skill players you're going to be looking at in dynasties for fantasy in the upcoming redraft season. Hell, DFS when the season rolls back around. Fantastic episodes we've got coming up. And you're talking about guests, man. Like, we're going to dive into some running backs, some wide receivers this week. We have got some fantastic guests lined up. You've got to get subscribed to the podcast. Check this out, man. I mean, just this week, we got Ray GQ of Destination Dev. He's going to stop by. Dude's everywhere in all places, doing work at FTN Fantasy as well. He's going to stop by later this week. Talk to Najee Harris with us, Josh Kalachi, our man, our main squeeze is going to stop by and talk Kyle Pitts. Like, it's fantastic, man, and that is just the tip of the iceberg. It is going to be all things content, days, weeks moving into the NFL draft season.
It's going to be awesome, and for anybody that's wondering how we're going to do these prospect podcasts, pretty much going to be, instead of going, you know, position by position with, you know, an hour-long podcast, breaking down a handful of players from each position, like, we're gonna dedicate 20, 30 minutes on each player and go in-depth as possible. So you're going to get a full allotment of podcasts, and say you have a certain question about, you know, like who we're going to discuss today, Travis Etienne, you don't have to scroll through a podcast and go to a certain timestamp and find out what we think about Travis Etienne because, or whoever, because we're going to have a podcast dedicated to pretty much every notable skill player that is going to be selected in the NFL draft in April. So it's going to be awesome. I'm excited to talk about a lot of these players because I started diving into these players right around right after the playoffs kind of started in the NFL. And then ever since then, it's kind of been, okay, I'm doing basketball still for FTN, obviously. But then if I'm not doing basketball right now, it's looking at these prospects.
Yeah, man, I'm a little bit later after playoffs and stuff like that, diving into these games. So just to kind of take everybody through the process, you're talking about we're going to have singular pods with these prospect profiles. So when you go on to FTN Fantasy, you are searching their names. You're on your favorite podcast app and you're searching their names. Search them. You can look at the Fade the Chalk feed. Like I'm saying, follow us at Chalk Fade on Twitter. We're going to be breaking down all of these players, and it's really just a marriage. Like, you hear people talk about film. You hear people talk about the analytics. You hear people talk about advanced metrics and stuff like that. We're marrying all these things together. I usually like to watch, like, anywhere between 5 and 8 games on a prospect, as much film as I possibly can. I mean, 8 to 9 games is kind of the sweet spot. Over multiple years, see how these guys, their games evolve over time, because as they get older, they get bigger, they get stronger, faster, or do some of these guys kind of fall off the table? And not only that, but give some context about the teams around them and stuff like that. So really diving into some of these, the production profiles, giving you the strengths, the weaknesses, and nailing some of these potential landing spots that we think that, like, whether it's team fit, draft capital, where these players could fall in the upcoming draft and what that's going to kind of mean for if you're looking at them in Dynasty and stuff. And all this is kind of be constantly evolving. Like, ADPs for rookies are going to shift as we get more news. But I really think that these are going to encapsulate and give you an in-depth look at these players from a singular perspective, especially, like, all of this is evergreen, Adam. Like, our opinions and thoughts, like, do the potential landing spots, does that stuff age well? Probably not, maybe not, especially after free agency. But the thoughts that we have on these prospects, singularly with their talent profiles, what they've done in college up to this point, entering the NFL draft, that's evergreen, dude. Like, that's not going to change. So I really think these are going to be super beneficial regarding how you're going to attack this. Hell, even walking into best ball season, how you're going to apply this for multiple formats, Adam.
This is perfect, you know, handful of podcasts to listen to if you're trying to prepare for your rookie draft in Dynasty, because, like, the only thing we know for sure right now is that Trevor Lawrence is going to be picked by the Jacksonville Jaguars. Other than that, this is a really up-in-the-air draft, right? Like, with the receivers, with the running backs, the landing spots. So, obviously, you're not doing your rookie draft until we know where these players are going to be playing in the NFL, but it'll give you an idea of what you think of these players, what you might see their skill set transition to in the NFL level. And I just think that it's going to be a really, really fun. I mean, it's annoying because we still have a long way to go until the draft, but we grind, baby. Like, that's what we do. We grind.
Exactly, man. Multiple forms of content all the time, man, covering all things. Like, we got it there on the bio, man. We're talking Dynasty. We're talking DFS, redraft. The content doesn't stop. We just change and flip the script to a new form of it, man. So, look, without further ado, let's talk about the man we came to sit here and discuss for today. And that's Travis Etienne, man. Tons of hype and praise coming out of Clemson. Dude is 5'10", 205. Now, I'm curious where he's going to weigh in at on his pro day and such. Walking into the NFL probably at the age of 22, 29.4, 34% BMI, just based off of the measurements that we have as of right now. Now, entering Clemson, this dude is a four-star recruit per 24/7 Sports. He actually was committed and looked like he was going to head to LSU before he spurned them, headed to Clemson. But as a guy that, I mean, even at the Nike camp, we know the speed is there, Adam. 2016, dude ran a 4.43 40 time. We've seen the production as well. I mean, like, this last season in 12 games, 914 rushing yards. His pass game usage went up with his target share being at 12%, got 60 targets on the year. And that's big comparable to the previous seasons where he had over 1,600 rushing yards in the two previous seasons due to Clemson's 20 total touchdowns in both seasons previously. But really the pass game usage and them getting him into space, which we'll talk about, like, why that kind of happened. We saw that explode this year. Like, I was talking about the 12% target share. I mean, you look at the two previous seasons, Adam, like 7% and 2%. It definitely went up. And discussing some of the situation around him at Clemson before we dive into, like, what your thoughts are on ETN, Clemson's O-line lost four starters to the NFL from 2019 to 2020. And now how much you want to take away from how much his production suffered, I mean, the offensive line took a definite downgrade, man. I mean, in 2019, they were first in adjusted line yards at the college level, 41st in power success rate, and first in stuff rate. So we're talking about all these line yard metrics to give people some context that are not really, like, don't dive into a lot of that different stuff. This is all per Football Outsiders. Adjusted line yards is very comparable for how they break that down at the NFL level. You can find all of this on their homepage, but the power and stuff rate is something I want to dive into real quick, is that the power success rate, we're going to talk about this moving forward, so giving people a context on what these numbers kind of mean. That power success rate is the percentage of runs on third and fourth down, 2 yards or less, where the running back achieved a first down or a touchdown. And the stuff rate is the percentage of carries where the running back was stopped at or before the line of scrimmage. So basically, you can look at this from an offensive line and defensive line way on not only evaluating how good of an offensive line he's running behind, but what kind of defense is some of these backs face. Like, did they get like a totally cush schedule? Did they get – what do they do versus better opponents? And like I'm talking about Clemson's offensive line, like – I mentioned what they did in 2019. They were first, 41st in power, first in stuff rate. That fell off, Adam. Like, 2020, they were 51st, 25th, and 36th, which is still okay, but it was not saying that you were a top five offensive line in all of college football. So, dude, what are your thoughts just from a production standpoint before we dive into ETN's strengths?
Yeah, I mean, you can't really make any argument against what he's done from a production standpoint, right? Like, yeah, the number, like, it's so dangerous to look at the raw numbers from 2020 because he obviously played fewer games. He played 12 games, whereas he played 15 the prior 2 years. According to PFF, his yards before contact went down this past year, which, like you said, Clemson lost four offensive linemen to the NFL over the past 2 years. So it's not too surprising, but he was at 1.8 yards before contact in 2020. Those numbers were pushing 3 and 4 in the previous 2 years, but still, like, he was productive, as you could see. He, like, obviously Etienne's known for his breakaway speed, but, like, he broke some tackles, too. Like, he wasn't, like, I think he was 12th in the nation in missed tackles forced. The production, like you said, was, in the passing game, was improved this past year, where he caught, what, 60 passes almost. I think he is some, or 50 passes, I should say. He is going to be a player that is going to be, like, I think he's really polarizing because of the production, the offense he was in. He wasn't a guy they consistently gave 20 carries to in Clemson, but they also had, you know, a ton of offensive weapons, as they normally do. So I think he's a guy that, just from a production standpoint, you look across the board, especially the target share, like, 2% in 2018, went up to 7.5% in 2019, and like you mentioned, over 12% in 2020. So he showed that when given the opportunity, he can be a very productive pass catcher. I think for him, more than maybe any other running back, it's really going to depend on landing spot, and we'll talk about that. But from a production background, the speed, like you mentioned, 4.43, 40, that was in, what, 2016 when he ran that 40? So, I mean,
yep.
5 years ago. Super.
Don't be surprised if he runs a 4.3, will you?
No, not at all. That's kind of what I was getting at. Like, 2016, it's 5 years ago, and he's so polarizing to me. Like I said, I think from a pure breakaway ability, there's nobody in this class better than Travis Etienne. But that's not always the easiest thing to rely on. So, at a time, like a couple years ago or a year and a half ago, it was like, okay, Travis Etienne's clearly the best running back in the class. Remember, we thought he was going to come out, what, last year? Then he returned to Clemson, put up huge numbers. Like, it would have been crazy to see where he landed among the last year's rookie running back class. It was obviously loaded with DeAndre Swift and James Robinson and Gibson and Cam Akers. It was just absolutely loaded. So now that he's stayed another year, had another very productive season, despite, you know, playing a little bit less games and having the offensive line lose four starters, still obviously a very productive season for Travis Etienne.
Yeah, and I definitely think that's really interesting. Like, with him staying the extra year, what his numbers look like. I mean, the pass game usage, especially with the offensive line concerns, I think it was really interesting, especially – so they didn't have Justin Ross this last season. So did that help him get a higher target share? Possibly. The other part about it is, like, Travis Etienne, and we'll kind of dive into this, Adam, with his strengths, I think that he's a player that is best used in space.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you look at with his home run type speed and ability, I think that with their use of using him more in the pass game, I think that was one, could be some of the offensive line issues, but also accentuating what the guy does well and putting him in space and saying, okay, let's get you into space and allow you to hit some more of these home runs because we know that you have game-breaking speed. You know, so is that a smart thing by Clemson? We don't always see that, especially at the college level, do these running backs get hyper-targeted. But I think looking at Etienne overall, I mean, he ran a lot of zone last year. 70% of his runs were zone concept. You're talking about the volume. I mean, the guy only had, from the last two seasons, only one game of 20 carries. Now, they did utilize him more. They saw the workload go up, like we're talking about with the pass game usage, where he did have higher volume games. Like, in 2020, he had four games of over 20 touches, and if you look back to 2019, only two in a larger game sample size. Tell me what you think are Etienne's strengths, and we'll kind of discuss that regarding, like, his skill set and before we dive into weaknesses, or at least, like, things we think that he can improve on.
I mean, the first thing that I notice when I watch him, like, other than the obvious just raw speed, is just burst and acceleration, which there's obviously a difference. Like, it does not take him long to get to full speed. Like, he just goes. Like, it's like he just presses a button and Travis Etienne's off. Like, crazy, crazy acceleration. And that's why he is just an absolute just home run threat on every single play when he touches the ball. I think he showed this past year that I think it helped him with, you know, you mentioned Justin Ross not being there, that it just helped kind of showcase that he is still an above average to very good pass catcher as well. I think that's part of his strength too. But for me, it's just like this, how quickly he can hit that second gear. Like, that I think is his biggest strength to tie in with his just overall speed. So that's the first thing I really noticed when I watched Travis Etienne, is how fast he just goes from 0 to 60 or whatever. He's going to make you miss as well, but, like, he's a running back that doesn't have to just make you miss. He can just run around you. He can just run right by you. So I like that. I think his vision's strong. The vision's good, but I'd like – and we'll talk about his weaknesses. The decision-making sometimes isn't, like, my favorite for Travis Etienne. But for me, like I said, biggest strength for him is acceleration and burst.
Yeah, I mean, so when I watch him on film – we're going to kind of get to it. There's a player that I'm really reminded, and I thought it was insane. Like, I had to go back and watch more film on this guy. But I feel like there are shades, and no comp is perfect, but there are shades of Tevin Coleman to his game and, like, what he succeeds at, some of his, decisiveness in his running style. Like, he is a north-south runner. You're not going to see Travis Etienne with a ton, like, I didn't see a ton of lateral agility when I'm watching him on film. Like, it is getting north-south, getting through the hole quick. Can he, like, on some of his runs, can he get skinny through the hole and explode even in the smallest of holes? Because we're talking about the Clemson line changing from one year to the next. Like, that also gives you a little bit of a greater insight about going from college to the NFL. Like, he's not going to find these Mack truck size holes, so he's going to have to get skinny, get small through the hole, because the holes are going to be smaller in the NFL in many different aspects, or probably most fits, unless, like, he just lands on a place that has an elite offensive line, top two, top three. So I think that that's important when looking 2019 versus 2020 film. But, like, for me, the strengths, he gets north-south, he's decisive. I think the vision is okay. I don't think that he has great vision. I also think that, like, with his burst, I think that it's good to very good. Like, I would not say that he has an elite burst, because really, I like his game, and the fact of it is that, like, Etienne is a guy that's not going to, and this we'll kind of get into some of his weaknesses here in a second. Etienne is a guy that is going to hit the hole and do with authority. He doesn't dance around behind the line of scrimmage. But also, like, if he gets caught in the backfield, dude, Etienne's not a guy that's going to break tackles and until he gets ahead of steam. Like, if you see him breaking tackles, usually that's 2-3 yards past the line of scrimmage, 5 yards past the line of scrimmage. If he gets caught behind the line of scrimmage, 9 times out of 10, he's a guy that's going to go down. Or did you see something different for him when you watched him?
I mean, according to PFF, he was 5th in the nation in yards after contact. But again, this is, like, with his size and his frame, he's not going to be someone you expect to just break a ton of tackles at the NFL level. It's just not part of his game, really. And I do agree, like, the vision as a whole, like, when he runs, you know, where the play design is made for, is solid. But he will, with his speed, he'll look to bounce outside on a lot of runs. And sometimes that'll work out when you're as fast as he is and explosive as he is. But a lot of times, especially at the next level, you're looking at, you know, first and 10, he'll try to bounce outside. All of a sudden, it's second and 12. Like, I feel like he's going to be one of those players that when he'll turn a lot of runs that should be losses of 6 yards into 1 yard gains, and they're going to look like really awesome runs. But at the end of the day, if he just kind of, like, he's not going to be, I think he's kind of like, this isn't a comp, obviously, but if you're looking at polar opposite running backs from a running back that came out last year, you can't tell me that he is the complete polar opposite in every way of James Robinson, right? Just James Robinson takes what's there, gets 4 yards every time, not a very fast running back, but just solid. And he takes what's there. He won't bounce runs, no nonsense runner. ETN is the opposite. He's crazy fast, will occasionally take what's there, but looks for the home run play a lot more often. Like, I think
a lot of stat lines that are very Chris Johnson-esque in his game catalog, where it's right. Like, he's got 15 runs for 50 yards, or and then he breaks one for like 60 or 70 or something like that, and these stat lines are puffed up. And it's not to say take away the big plays. I'm not saying that, but I think that he's going to be a guy at the NFL level, unless he ends up, and we'll talk about landing spots later, into a spot where they're able to get him in space consistently, a really, really good offensive line. Like, if he lands in this place with a bad offensive line, I think he really could struggle in his rookie season. Or you're going to see these games where the first few carries, like, he's got 14 for 40, and then he busts a long run, and then it makes his overall game look a whole hell of a lot better on paper than possibly what it is.
Yeah, so you mentioned Tevin Coleman, and it's funny because, like, we'll talk about landing spot, but, like, he kind of reminds me of Matt Breida in a way, too. Breida, like, obviously, the production, totally different. Like, Breida was undrafted, if I'm not mistaken. Like, totally different in terms of production, caliber, prospect, everything like that. But in terms of, like, how he could be used at least to start in the NFL, like, Matt Breida is a guy that's always been, like, 12 to 15 touches, and you pair him with a running back. I could see an NFL team wanting that same kind of role for ETN. We know Matt Breida is obviously a burner, you know, 4.3. I think his best 40 time was, like, 4.39. Just ridiculously fast, will bounce some runs, can break some tackles occasionally. Like, he kind of reminds me of Matt Breida. That might be, like, the low-end comp, although Matt Breida is no slouch. Like, he's just, when Matt Breida's on the field, he's good. You mentioned Tevin Coleman, which I could definitely see. Coleman's another running back that kind of does the same thing, will bounce runs outside, never really got a full workload. And the only times he got full workloads were when Devonta Freeman was out in Atlanta, or, you know, Mostert and, you know, Jeff Wilson or whoever were out in San Francisco. Do you think that kind of makes sense with Matt Breida? Again, not in terms of production or highly touted of a prospect they are, but, like, kind of the play style, the metrics, the speed, and everything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I definitely
Etienne's a little. He weighs a little bit more. I think he's like 10. Yeah, 10 or 15 no, more pounds.
I mean, I think there's definitely differences between that. And, like, we're talking about, no comp is perfect, but from a skill set standpoint, I absolutely get where you're going with it. Like, as far as the ability to hit the home run, the speed, as well as the ability to play in the passing game and stuff like that. So, yeah, no, I absolutely understand where you're going with
it. And it's funny because we mentioned two 49ers running backs, or former 49ers running backs, and I don't know if they're going to look at running backs, but he would fit so well in Kyle Shanahan's system. I mean,
any kind of zone-heavy scheme and that have zone concepts, I think is going to be good for him. But before we get to landing spots, Adam, when you watched ETN and stuff, like, what did you come away with, things that, like, areas that he can improve, or things that you even think are, like, obviously some holes in his game right now?
I think the most glaring one is pass protection. He had a lot of rough games in pass pro, which, like, we talk about it, like, for rookie running backs, you have to pass protect to get on the field. But also, if you're drafting a running back in the first or second round, which is where ETN most likely goes, you're, like, if he goes to the Jets, they're not taking him off the field because he can't pass pro. Like, it's the Jets. They don't have any talent there. So it's like, it goes hand in hand. But if you're just asking me a weakness, yeah, that is probably one of his his biggest weaknesses is pass protection. His ball security isn't, like, incredible either. He had a couple games where he really struggled to hold on to the football. But those are coachable, you know? It's not like it's a weakness where, you know, he can't run, you know? Like, he just can't run fast, or he can't, you know what I mean? Like, you can't coach a player to run faster. It's like you either have it or you don't. But pass protection, ball security, like, you can coach those things. What about you?
Yeah, I definitely noticed the pass protection. I felt like there were, and as many games as I watched, it was just inconsistencies. Like, there were reps mm-hmm. where he didn't get low enough on an oncoming, like, whether it was a free rusher or just picking up somebody on the blitz. There were reps where he just got blown the hell up. There were other times where he chipped and not well enough, and you saw Trevor Lawrence get hit. I think that they're definitely, and not so much, I don't want to say effort-wise, but I think that there are definitely inconsistencies in his pass protection. Now, some of this, like, when you're talking about, like, landing spots and stuff like that, different teams have different requirements and what they're going to ask the running backs to do. Like, some teams in the NFL don't ask the running backs to pass protect as much. They want them to run routes and be used as more of a receiver. So, is that as big of a knock for ETN? It just depends on where he lands, man.
Yeah, if they ask him to, instead of, like, on third down, if they ask him not to just sit back and pass protect, but chip and then run a route, like, that's probably what they'll ask him to do more often than not.
I mean,
the only concern is, does he come off the field like with Clyde Edwards-Helaire this year, right? We thought Clyde Edwards-Helaire was this elite pass-catching running back, which he was at LSU. He was unbelievable, probably one of the best pass-catching running backs to come out in quite some time. And then he has that first game against Houston where it didn't really matter that he didn't have a catch because he ran all over them, and we were like, okay, he's going to be awesome. And then as the weeks went on, Darrell Williams was playing all the third down and two-minute snaps, and that really hurt his upside. And again, when you have – it depends on landing spot. Like, when you have Patrick Mahomes, you probably want to protect him. So that hurt Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He didn't have the year we all thought he would, especially as a pass catcher.
Yeah, I mean, really, that's what it comes down to. Are they going to utilize him if he's getting pulled off the field on third downs because of some of these things, or these inconsistencies hold true through training camp if we have that, or especially walking into the NFL season? But some of the things for me as far as a pure runner for ETN, like I was talking about, you don't see a lot of lateral agility. Like, he's not a guy that is going to sit here and jump, hit a jump cut and miss somebody if they get to him behind the line of scrimmage, as well as even the open field, man. Like, he'll do some jab steps and as far as, like, take, like change direction and stuff like that, but he's very north-south. You don't see him, like, when he breaks these long runs, it's not like he's a guy going from one hash mark to the next or sideline to sideline. Usually it's him, like, breaking through a hole and busting along mm-hmm. when based off of his speed and being in space. So I think that some of the box scores and the raw numbers I just don't think that he's as nuanced of a runner for the explosive ability that he has. I think a lot of that is speed and what he can do in space and the ability that he does get downhill quickly, which is great. But as far as, like, being a running back that if he lands on a team that he's asked to because of the offensive line or scheme and things like that, create on his own, I think that that's the part where I have a little bit of pause. Because, like I said, I'm talking about as far as, like, being a nuanced runner, like, he'll hit a spin move and stuff like that to try to, like, take care of, like, breaking tackles. I think that some of his broken tackle ability, I question how well it translates to the NFL, because a lot of his broken tackles on the games that I watched, and he played numerous teams that were top 40, top 50 in college as far as line yards and success rate and stuff rate and stuff like that. So it wasn't like he just played cakewalk schedules the entirety of his last 2 years, but there were times where I'm like, I mean, he would hit a spin move and shed a tackler, and I'm like, I don't know in the NFL if he would have shed that tackler, like, versus college where some of these guys, not all of these guys are NFL players, and some of the tackling ability has to get called into question as far as how are guys. Yes, we look on paper and we're saying, okay, he's got a lot of avoided tackles, but sometimes it's not only that, it's the manner and how these players are breaking tackles and what they're doing on the field that you try to marry the two together. And as good as his tackle breaking ability says on paper, I question a little bit of that, of how that translates to the NFL.
And there's also a difference between broken tackles and avoided tackles too. And I feel like Etienne's more of an avoided tackle guy, right? Like he won't run through an arm tackle, but he'll avoid an arm tackle, or he'll juke an arm tackler occasionally, right? But like, that's my concern too, is like, if he's on a team that the offensive line isn't creating consistent holes, we might see a lot of those games we mentioned where he has, you know, if he breaks the long run, and it's funny because it was kind of how Miles Sanders was for a lot of last year too, before Doug Peterson finally, you know, put him on the field consistently. It might be a lot of those like 14 for 65, and then all of a sudden the next week he has 17 for 130 and a touchdown. But I think before we get to landing spots, I've seen like a lot of like the high end comps for him as Alvin Kamara, and I think that's very, very dangerous.
Oh God, I hate that comp. Ugh.
Yeah, I thought that was really, really, really dangerous because Alvin Kamara, it's hard with player comps.
Lazy. I feel like somebody says, okay, Alvin Kamara can catch a lot of passes. He can't caught a lot of passes. Like, that's the same, right?
The difference is, like, Kamara can run every single route you can ask, and Etienne was used a lot in screens and stuff like that. Not to say he can't run the routes, but it's just, it's tough with player comps because you don't want to, you kind of want to find a middle ground. You're not trying to compare every player to an all-pro player, but there's obviously times where there's clear glimpses of certain players. But, like, at the high end, like, I don't think Tevin Coleman would be your high-end comp. If you had a high-end comp for him, who would it be?
If he lands in the right system, I think the ceiling, as far as production goes, is probably C.J. Spiller in his heyday, what he did with the Bills.
Okay. And now you're breaking my heart because I was, like, all in on Spiller for obvious reasons. But, hey, like, I could see it. It's not just because they both went to Clemson. I could see it.
Dude, I think the skill sets are comparable for a lot of these players. I think it's home run ability. And something else before we get to landing spots that I want to bring up. They were talking about broken tackles and how players are avoiding them and such on the field. The other thing that kind of concerned me a little bit when I was watching film on ETN from 2019 to 2020, instead of shedding tacklers and running through contact at the contact point, I did see some instances where he slowed up or there was hesitation and stuff of that nature. Dude, if he does that in the NFL, he is going to get blown the hell up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's funny because I had Matt Breida because I was trying to compare their measurables and 40 times stuff like that when I was comparing Breida to ETN. On Player Profile, Breida's best comparable is CJ Spiller. So
that's funny. Diving into this, we're talking about all these comps and stuff like that. Looking at draft capital and possible landing spots, where do you think he could possibly land, like, as far as a fit, and where do you think a reasonable landing spots are for him, considering draft capital?
So, I've seen a lot of, because I'm just all in on draft stuff, I've been looking at a lot of mock drafts. I've seen a lot of the Jets with their second first-round pick. I don't think, if you're going to take a running back in the first round, it should be Najee Harris. We'll talk about him on Friday. That's just how I feel, and I'm sure you agree. But the Jets as a whole make a lot of sense. They just don't have any talent on offense outside of Denzel Mims really right now. And we know the running game is not good. The Jets are going to be a popular team. Miami makes some sense. But at the same time, if I'm Miami, I just go receiver and offensive line. Like, you just keep giving Tua help. And I know Travis Etienne would be giving Tua help. But go get a receiver. Go get more offensive line. Look at the Chiefs. I mean, you can never have enough offensive line. Clearly, they wish they had more on Sunday. Pittsburgh, we'll see what happens to James Conner. Like, when we talk about these running backs, you're going to hear the same handful of teams, right? You're going to hear Pittsburgh, you're going to hear the Jets, you're going to hear the Dolphins. Buffalo, maybe, but I don't think they go there. I think if I'm the Bills, like, I just, again, the same kind of situation. Load up on offensive line and cornerbacks. That's what I would do as a Bills fan, but that's beside the point. And then two other teams. Seattle, depending on what happens with Chris Carson. I think Etienne would be a nice compliment to Rashad Penny if Carson were to leave. And then Atlanta. Atlanta's going to need a running back. Todd Gurley's a free agent. They're not going to bring him back. Brian Hill, Ito Smith, they haven't been anything special. A home run hitter like Travis Etienne would make some sense because Atlanta's a team that they're not going to be a team that you run the ball 25 times a game with anyway. So give Etienne 15 carries, 15 touches. Hopefully he breaks off a long run. It'll be the complete opposite of what they had with Gurley last year. Gurley just couldn't rip off long runs. Etienne would give him that ability and dynamic in the backfield. Not to mention, yes, he's 31 or 32, but you still have Julio. You still have an ascending Calvin Ridley. So I think those teams all make sense for Travis Etienne.
So I like the Jets, especially, that you brought up. Because the other thing that we haven't discussed up to this point is that if the Jets, so they take a quarterback. The other thing about, like, with the Jets and with their new offensive coordinator coming from San Francisco, I think you see a lot of zone concepts in the run game.
Yep, if it's going to be a carbon copy.
I don't disagree. But if they take somebody like, say, Justin Fields or even possibly Zach Wilson, the other thing that I think needs to get brought up here, Adam, is that if you see a lot of these RPO concepts, I think that is going to help Travis Etienne because there was a lot of misdirection, a lot of RPO in Clemson's scheme where they were able to create space in the run game as well with Trevor Lawrence's legs. So if the Jets take somebody like Fields and then they follow it up with somebody like Etienne at the top of the second, with his own concepts, with the pass game coordinator coming from San Francisco, one of the floors, I think that that could be a good spot for him. As well as, dude, I'm not going to rule out the Jaguars. Like, they have a pick.
Don't you do this to me.
They have a pick at 33. And I know all the James Robinson truthers just think I hate this man. I don't hate the man. I really, really don't. I love him. I love what he did last year. But new coaching staff, and we're talking about RPO concepts. I know it just sounds like I'm doing a layup and something just lazy. But look, hear me out, Adam.
No, I get it, man.
The Jaguars have the 33rd pick and the 46th pick. If Etienne falls a little bit, because it depends, man. Every draft is different with these running backs.
Mm-hmm.
If he goes in the second round, reuniting him with Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, but what if they don't take Trevor Lawrence first?
Oh, my God. I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. If they reunited with Trevor Lawrence, the RPO concepts there, getting him into space, plus you're talking about if he's a committee back, 12 to 15 touches to start out in the NFL. And look, up until they had injuries, Jacksonville's offensive line was playing extremely well. So as crazy as that sounds, I think that that could be a good landing spot for him. And I want to bring up also the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah.
Like, does he fall all the way to 48? Probably not. But in a one-cut scheme with, we're talking about another running quarterback.
That's a lot of speed in that backfield.
I think it would be really, really interesting, as well as you're talking about him being an asset in the pass game. And for all the Chase Edmonds stands, look, I get you. I like him as a player. But considering Chase Edmonds as a three-down workhorse running back in the NFL, I just don't see it happening. So if Kingsbury, which, dude, the Cardinals went really run-heavy. They have over the last two seasons. I mean, if Kenyon Drake does not come back, they don't want to pay the man. I don't disagree with that. You take a guy with fresh legs that has the ability to break long runs. You marry that with Kyler's ability on the ground. I think it could open up different facets of this offense, especially moving forward.
If they don't re-sign Kenyon Drake, I wouldn't put it past Arizona to trade up a little bit for Etienne. Not a massive, trade up, but like kind of like what the Colts did last year for Jonathan Taylor. Like, that could be really interesting. He would be very, very hyped up for fantasy because you mentioned the RPO and how that helps these running backs find the holes and these running backs that can break big plays. Look at Miles Sanders when Jalen Hurts took over last year. He had a matchup against the Saints, who were like the best run defense over the past 3 years in the NFL. And the Saints didn't know what hit them with the RPO. Sanders was ripping off long runs. Jalen Hurts was ripping off long runs. And Sanders was much better down the stretch. Like that could be really huge for a player like Travis Etienne. So, yeah, the Cardinals is a really, really good call. I think that would make a lot of sense. And at the end of the day, just just put more speed on the field, right? Like, you got Kyler. You know, Hopkins isn't a blazer, but he's still one of the best receivers in the NFL. Like, get some more speed out there and just give Kyler, you know, I think Etienne as a pass catcher is better than Drake, and I don't want to say he's definitely better than Edmonds, but he's in the same, you know, tier for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I like Etienne. I think some of his numbers, people are going to think and believe that, like, he's running all these angle routes and he's running from the slot a ton. Like, I saw some nuanced route running, or at least flashes of that. Now, over the last 2 years, I've seen more dump-offs and things of that nature. Like, I don't think that Etienne, for as much love as he gets for all the pass game stuff and the volume that he got there, I think that if we're looking at just skill set wise, I think that his pass game prowess is a little bit overblown. Like,
that's why I didn't get the Kamara comps.
No, I didn't get it either. And I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire was a way better route runner than even Etienne was the last 2 years. Like, I think CEH is a better route runner.
Same with Swift.
More.
Swift was running legitimate routes in Detroit last year. Like,
did I see some of that usage and out wide a little bit? Yes. But it wasn't a ton where I think that people are going to automatically think that he got way more of that than he actually did, considering the targets and the receptions that he had this last season.
No, I agree. Man, you got me really intrigued by Arizona now.
Look, it'd be a great fit for him, and I think as far as like an efficiency and a workload standpoint, because you'd still have Edmonds there, and they could still split the backfield. And as far as home run ability, I think it'd be a wonderful fit for him.
I actually think Arizona is the best fit for him. Jets aren't going to be an elite run blocking team. Plus, the offense is still going to be bad. Atlanta would be somewhat interesting, I think. But Arizona, if Kenyon Drake is not on that team next year, wow.
I think Arizona and the Jets are tied for number one for me, and I think Jaguars will be the second spot I could see him landing at. And that, it's a short list, I know, but
I can't wait for James Robinson to rush for 2,000 yards this year.
Hey, man, look, I'll be cheering along with everybody else. I love the guy, love the player, just trying to be real as far as what can happen.
No, you're right. It's
offseason, man.
Completely new coaching staff, so.
All right, everyone, that is our prospect profile for Travis Etienne. Like we're talking about, get subscribed to the podcast. Follow us at ChalkFade on Twitter. We're going to be rolling these out all the way through the NFL draft season. Don't miss one as we drop them. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.